This is the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe, and you are listening to Royal Ramblings.
Hello, this is the man who will not die, Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the Royal Ramblings of Robert and Danny.
Hi, I'm Robert, and sadly for the second week in a row, Danny isn't joining us on this podcast, but you've just got me and my dulcet tones. As ever, you can contact us via the Huffington Post, you can email us at royalramblings@gmail.com, and you can tweet us at royal_ramblings. Next week, we are going to have a massive show. For the first time ever, the Royal Ramblings, Danny and I are putting on our own wrestling event. Sold out, 400 people coming to it. Two friends of the Royal Ramblings will be headlining. We have the star of Bishop Bootcamp, Richard Parliament, and the other star of Bishop Bootcamp, Noam Dar, as our main eventers, and some great British wrestlers involved as well. So we'll have all the backstage gossip from that. There'll be videos up online, videos on the Huffington Post, as well as all the gossip, all the interviews, everything that goes on from the show. So we're very excited by that. But this week, we have a big friend of the Royal Ramblings, someone that we've been involved with, done things with for over many years now. I think dates about some 5 or 6 years we've been working with him, and delighted to have him on the show for the first time. Nick Aldis, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. So, main reason we got you on the show today, most people obviously will know you as Magnus from TNA and other wrestling companies around the world, but you have a book out, Superstar Bozzy. First time writing a book, is this?
Yeah, first time as an author. Obviously, some fans who listen to this might be aware of the fact that I have written a column for Fighting Spirit magazine for,
of course,
gosh, 7 years now,
yeah.
which is amazing to me sometimes to think that I've been able to keep that going for so long. It's tough sometimes, though, but I know I've driven Brian crazy at times, the editor, with my deadline tardiness. But yeah, I think it was one of those things where it came about through Carrie Dunn, who edited the book for me,
yeah.
Who you're probably familiar with,
yeah.
Her journalistic work, and she has her wrestling blog and all that stuff, and she had a book. That she basically, it was about British wrestling, and it was about the history of it, and then about the thriving current UK scene. And she asked me if she could use my image for the front cover, and I was flattered. I said, yeah, of course. And it was just one of those things where, through that, the publishers, you know, I started a dialogue up with the publishers and said, well, you know, I've always wanted to do this, always wanted to do a fitness book. And, you know, it's one of those things where fans, through my Twitter or through my website and other different avenues, it's a common thread that comes up. It's, you know, asking me about how I stay in shape or what I eat or how I train, and, you know, and all these different questions. And I just thought, you know, well, maybe there's a market for it. And I did enjoy doing it. It was a long process, but yeah, I'm very proud of the book now. So, yeah, it's available now.
From page one, you can tell this is a personal book. You dedicate it to your son. How's being a father changed your life?
I mean, immensely. It's one of those things where it's a cliche sort of. There's all these different cliches that people hear, and they will say to you when you're expecting a child, and, you know, you start to get tired of it. I know that it became tiresome to Mickey and I, because it was anyone who had a kid, oh, everything changes, your priorities change, and, you know, it's not just about you anymore, and all this kind of stuff. And you get to a point where it all starts to sort of wash over you, but then as soon as he's there, it's 100% clear what all those things are talking about. And now I'm one of those irritating people, and many other people who are expecting kids, like, oh, it'll change your life. You know, but honestly, for me, I guess, you know, they're obviously venturing into the unknown, so you don't really know what to expect. I do know that my biggest reservation was how I was going to manage my time.
Mm.
But it's funny, because having a child and having that, you know, knowing that he's completely dependent on you and what you provide, it's really renewed my hustle, actually. You know, so, and it's as crazy as it may seem to some people who are thinking, well, didn't you just walk away from a six-figure contract with TNA, you know? And it's like, yes, I did, but because I've got my hustle back, and I realized that it was time for me to venture into the unknown and keep pursuing, you know, my bigger dreams and not get stuck in a comfort zone, which is definitely what I had done up to that point.
So the book's a great read. As somebody that would never do anything that you've written in your book, that's just not... I like eating far too much. But it's a great read. But you talk right at the beginning. I found it quite interesting. The first story you really tell is about your first defence as champion, not when you actually won the title. Why was that?
Yeah. Because to me, the circumstances where I won the title were... I enjoyed the match that I had with Jeff, but I suffered a concussion during it, so I don't remember a ton of it. And then it made things a little difficult logistically, you know, for the following episodes and stuff like that. So it's not really the fondest sort of memory for me winning the title, other than the fact that obviously it's a very surreal moment. But you know, to me, as a performer and as in my role. At that time, as a villain,
yeah,
that's the most important thing is defending the title as champion. And to me, I always thought the biggest missed opportunity was the fact that I won the title in December,
mm-hmm.
And then we went to the UK, and it's like that. For me, it seemed like a missed opportunity to not just wait until we got to the UK for me to win the title,
yeah.
But at least. It was a significant thing to me to be like, this is a major company with worldwide television who have got, you know, 10,000 people. So when the arena and you, a Brit, are the world champion, you're defending the title. Manchester. And that was a significant, you know, that to me was a more significant thing, especially considering the fact that it was also with... Gunner, who, nothing against the guy, but he wasn't like a bigger name than I was.
Yeah.
So it wasn't one of those things where up to that point, the credit can always be given to the other guy. So for me, it was a significant thing because it was like, this is, you've worked for 10 years to get to a point where you are, like, you're the main guy in this. Like, and it's your responsibility to not only... you know, make the title, but also to make this guy you're working with and to elevate him to your level. So overall, that was why it was a more significant night for me.
Okay, fair enough. Throughout the book, you have these superstar spotlights. Mickey's one of those. And I want to just touch on Kurt Angle, who obviously is going through a bit of a difficult time with injuries, or he's always going through a difficult time, but at the moment, right. Specifically, you talk about him being an inspiration and a mentor to you. What's it like being in the ring with Kurt?
Well, Kurt legitimately is an inspiration to me. He was, from around the time that I... Obviously, I always watched wrestling as a child, but then around the time that I really formulated the idea in my head that I wanted to be a wrestler,
yeah.
was just around the time that Kurt was debuting in the then WWF. And it was, you know, he was so clearly special. And then within, a year, he was top guy and he was working with The Rock and Austin and Triple H and all of the marquee talent, and then, you know, fast forward to two or three years down the line, and suddenly he is the guy. I mean, like, not, you know, he's just considered the best of the best.
Yeah.
And I just was so, I was always such a big training guy. I love training. I love, like, improving myself. I've always had a real sort of, I was got a real enjoyment out of how you feel when you improve your performance, or you improve your strength, or you improve your well-being, you know, and things of that nature. And so, to me, Kurt embodied so many of those things. He was such an inspiration to me. The amount of times I would, go back and watch tapes of his and stuff like that before I went to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be, it would be an inspiration to me. And so, there's a moment in the book that I talk about where he came up to me at one of the TV tapings and was like, I was just getting ready. He's like, man, you're in such good shape. Like, how do you know? And I just go, you're Kurt Angle. Like, why do you have to be?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, this is the most surreal thing ever. Yeah. But, you know, obviously to me it was a huge confidence because it meant that he really, you know, put his, you know, he obviously put me on somewhat of a pedestal. But being in the ring with him, it's work. It really is. You know, you can't, as performers, you know, you get used to it. Everyone does, I don't care what you say, except Kurt, maybe. You get used to a certain pace and you get used to a certain cadence of everything, and you know when you can take a rest. Kurt does none of that. It's like it's 100 miles an hour. It's go, go, go. And you know, he does not fight in anything. And, you know, you always get that feeling that you're half in a contest. Like it's not 100% a dance. It's partly contest. He's got it in such a good balance that you don't feel. It's not like when I wrestle in Japan sometimes, you know, it's just been like, this guy is just like trying to take liberties with me, and it gets irritating because it's just the match suffers, you know, because that's just the way, that's just the culture over there, is that they want to, everyone's always trying to test you in Japan, and it sucks. Like, it gets really irritating because you just go like, this is a work, like, this is a dance between two people, like, don't kick me in the face. Like, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
It's not strong style. It's not showing how tough you are as a fighting spirit. It's just being an idiot, you know, and like that to me, I don't get. And like, you know, I've had like a few situations like that in Japan where I've just been like, this isn't working to me. But with Kurt, it's like he has that right balance of doing just enough, like, you know, doing things in such a way that, you know, it puts you on notice. It's like it changes your body language and makes you really kind of act like you're in a real contest.
Yeah. So you as you mentioned, Kurt is an inspiration to you, but you list a lot of wrestlers that you were mesmerized by growing up, and Hogan was one of those wrestlers. What's your view on the current situation he's facing?
I mean, you can't argue with what, you know, with what was said. It's a tough situation. You know, it's what he said was wrong in every sense. It's funny because I had a different view of Hulk having met him and worked with him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, it's not like I ever really had a problem with him, I don't think he had a problem with me. I can't imagine why he would. We barely spoke.
Yeah.
But you know, he's definitely a different guy. But I don't wish like ill will on anybody, and I hope he can recover from it. I don't mean to say that I hope that, you know, people forgive him or anything like that. I just hope that he can find some peace, but certainly with a bad judgment.
No, absolutely. Okay, let's move on. There's a bit towards the beginning of the book, which I, to be honest, I didn't understand lots of what you're talking about in terms of what exercises do, having never done any exercises like this in my life. But you talk at the beginning about growing up, you being skinny, punny is your word, and unimpressive, and puny, sorry, and unimpressive. And you go on to say that you were scared of people knowing that you were working out. Why was that? I don't really understand why at that stage you were scared to let them know that.
Well, because I was so skinny, I had a very negative body image as a young man. So, you know, the idea of people thinking that I was lifting weight, I didn't want people to laugh at me because you have to remember that I was the youngest of five siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was constantly told, like, my older brother had better what are called mesomorphic sort of genes, in the sense he had like a broad shoulders and like slim waist, and you know, because he was a little shorter than me, but he had a better frame, right? And so like I was constantly told by my parents, you know, early on, like, well, you're just built differently, you know, you've got more of, you know, this side of the family's genes, and you've got, you know, you're just going to be long and skinny, and like stuff. And I just, I don't want to be long and skinny, you know.
Yeah.
But it was that sort of thing of like, you know, even, this is funny because we're talking about, you know, between 10 and 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But even then, things have progressed so much even since then that, you know, there was still a lot in England, I guess, and especially for my parents, their generation, there was still a lot of that idea of, oh, well, you know, whatever genetics you've got, that's what you're stuck with.
Yeah.
You know, there was still a lot of that mindset of like, you're wasting your time. You know, why are you doing that? It's not going to do anything. And for me, I just knew differently. I knew in my heart, like, if I kept working at it, and you know, but I had to get myself to a certain point. I wanted to do it by myself, you know, without anyone knowing before, like, so that I, you know, I literally worked out in my bedroom as a 12, 13 year old, you know, as quietly as I could, and, you know, to avoid anyone talking to me about it, because I just wanted to get myself to a certain point first, so that then I could, you know, because in my mind, I've always been one of those people that says, you know, let me see the results, you know, rather than, don't tell me. And which is funny considering I'm in the wrestling business, but there's a lot of people that will tell you like what they're going to do and like what's on the horizon and the big things coming up,
yeah,
and all this kind of stuff. But for me, I'm more like, let me just see the results, you know.
Yeah.
Like, work, you know, work hard quietly, you know, and let the results speak for themselves.
The book is in different sections, and I hope you'll go out and read it. But and the mantra on the front page is partly the sections in the book: eat, train, live. And where did this idea, where did this develop from?
Really, just when I first was discussing the book and the layout with the publisher and with Carrie, obviously, you know, the two main, you know, areas when it comes to improving your body and to, you know, improving your well-being is diet and exercise, you know, and so eat and train.
Yeah.
But to me, there's a huge portion that then is left out that sort of gets touched on by magazines and just kind of thrown around at some casual sort of coffee table reading, but it's lifestyle and how you live your life. And to me, like, that was a significant enough part of the whole puzzle that I felt like it needed its own definition.
Yeah.
And that refers to things like how you recover, you know, recovery techniques, injury prevention, you know, getting enough sleep, you know, reducing stress. You know, because stress has an unbelievably oxidative effect on the body. People don't understand how damaging stress can be. You know, mm-hmm. I guarantee if you think hard enough, you'll know somebody in your life who seems constantly under the gun, you know, constantly seems kind of like the weight of the world on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that person's always getting sick too. You know, stress, yeah, it causes a release of something called cortisol, which is just the most, it's a hugely damaging, you know, free radical that just eats away at stuff and just, you know, reduces your immune system, eats away at muscle, you know, increases body fat. It's an awful, awful thing. So you really do legitimately need to reduce your stress, you know, and take moments to, like, meditate and to let everything disappear and dissipate, especially when you've got a lot on your plate. You have to take those moments for yourself, because it's good for your health and it's good for your overall performance, you know.
That's really what I got from reading the book as a whole. It's not just about going down to the gym, eating the right thing. It is in the head as well. It's about making
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was the key that I took away from the whole book.
So,
we ask everybody that we interview exactly the same question, and we've had some great answers to this in the past. What's your favourite, what's your best rib story that you can share with us?
Best rib?
We've heard some great ones about Spud dressing up and dancing around, we've sheep being put into Vince McMahon's office, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that story. Well, I'll give you one that I did.
Okay.
and it was funny. We were just talking about. I just saw him the other day at the first GSW TV taping, yeah, in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And it was with Chris Wodecki, who you might know better as Chris Masters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
WWE.
Yeah.
When we were in India back in 2011, 2012, doing Rinka King with Jeff. The roster was made up of like half, you know, Western guys,
yeah,
you know, mostly Americans, but then there was like me and some Canadians and stuff, obviously. And then the other half of the guys were like these Indian guys who were 100, who were completely green. You know, Sanjay and Road Dogg had gone over there and done some scouting.
Yeah,
and maybe Touch Mantel as well.
Yeah.
And they just found, you know, who they thought were going to be the best prospects. You know, Koya was one of those guys. But they were all, you know, none of them had ever wrestled, you know, ever. like it was a completely new thing to them. So they just picked out who they thought would be the best prospect, so they might pick it up the best.
Yeah.
One of the guys who we had on that show was called Zorawa, or Zorawa, I forget how exactly they pronounce it, but he was a little person, you know, I guess, you know, he was trying to be India's answer to Hornswoggle, I guess. And he was, you know, I could be wrong, but I feel like they told me that he'd been in some Bollywood films and some TV shows, stuff like that. He was like somewhat of a like minor celebrity.
Yeah.
Well, there was this, you know, Masterpiece was doing, he was doing his Master Lock challenge, you know, the full Nelson. We recreated it in India, right? It's a virgin territory. He's never seen anything like this. So he's doing that week after week. And we were all kind of getting on his case a little bit. Because Chris, he's a great guy. He's a sweetheart. But he's like, when you first meet him, he can rub you the wrong way a little bit. He's very loud and abrasive, like obnoxious kind of meathead. But he's like, he means well. He just comes across that way because of the way he talks and stuff. He's all kind of like, hey, do, you know. Well, and we were all getting on his case because we were all going like, geez, you got to wrestle twice and they're like work with these Indian guys, and all you have to do is like put a guy in a friggin' full Nelson for 1 minute and then walk away again, and this is BS. But we'd already kind of had it in our minds that we wanted to rib him somehow anyway, and then this perfect opportunity just presented itself because he had to do this segment, I guess, where he was going to do it, and then there I was a plant of the audience. He's like, you know, he obviously, you know, jumps over the rails and says, do me, you know, and or like challenges him or something. I can't remember. However, surreptitiously, he ends up, you know, Masters ends up
doing
the gorilla press. And he goes to press him out of the ring. And the idea was that there was all these security and referees waiting. He'd press the midget and he would land and be, you know, and be terrified.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be like a big heat moment for the disaster piece, as we call them. Like to, you know, to manhandle this little person.
Yeah.
You know, like it's so terrible, right?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I guess Zorro, I didn't really get the memo when it came to his acting, because instead of landing and being like terrified and like selling it like he'd just seen a ghost, you know, like he'd just been pressed by this giant man, he landed on his feet, like just because the way they caught him so well, he just landed on his feet and jumped up and started doing the DX crotch chop, like just started jumping around doing the DX crotch chop, which is because he like ruined the whole segment because he just didn't get it, you know, like, so remember those guys are in front of like thousands of people for the first time in all this production, and they didn't know what to do. They were just going at business themselves. It was like dealing with children, you know. And so like, and obviously like I'm sitting there on the headset with Jeff and Dutch, and Jeff is just furious. He's like, God, I'm throwing all these, you know, all that words around. But you know, and then in the end, we just have to laugh about it because we're just like, "Dang, ruined that segment completely." We have to figure out some way to edit it. Because it was just like you just didn't know it. It was so hard to communicate. Like if Sanjay was the only guy who could really
speak,
translate, and really convey this sort of what he was supposed to do. But it's like he's only got so many hours in a day. Well, anyway. But in the end, like Jeff calms down and he goes, "Well, at least I've had some fun with it."
Yeah.
But I mean, this is an ongoing rip. Okay, I mean, this rip was about two or three days in the making. So the next day at breakfast, I was sitting there at breakfast with Jeff and Chris came down, and Jeff goes, "Hey, Chris, come over here for a second, you know." And he just looks at me and Sanjay and Abyss. I forget who else is there, but like, just give us this look, like, "What's this?" And he goes, "Hey, Chris, I want you to hear it from me before you hear it from somebody else. But you know, based on the way that our little Indian friend sold your gorilla press and things like that yesterday, obviously, you know, it's the new market, you know, guy, we're gonna try and build some credibility here. We're just gonna have to go in a different direction with you. You know, we had all these plans, but you know, based on that, we're gonna have to do something different. But sit tight, it's not your fault. Like we know it's not your fault, but we're going to have to go in a different direction. All right? So just sit said, guys, buddy, everything's going to be okay. And, you know, when you hear that from him, it's the worst.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Heard that from at one point or another, but when you hear that from, it's just, it's so demoralizing.
Yeah.
So, and Chris walks away all right, sure, thanks, Jeff. I'm like, just, whatever you need, but you can tell he's just thinking, what the hell? So then we let him just stew on it all day. Of course, Jeff hadn't changed any plans.
Of course,
everything was still the same. But we let him sit on it all day, that was going to be the we were changing everything, and they were writing him out of the show and all this stuff based on the thing. But then it came to that night, we had this little big courtyard poolside area for us at this hotel.
Yeah.
And we had this big table of guys, it's at least 20 of us all out there, and beer everywhere, and these drinks, and a few of the Indian guys had showed up, a few of the Indian wrestlers who we'd started to get along with,
yeah.
Some of the guys who really kind of were starting to get it. So we called them over, and then we happened to see Noah, right? And just as he was walking through the door, Masters is walking out to go and use the bathroom or something. And he's had a few drinks and maybe a little something else, and he goes, hey, what the hell are you doing here? And it just so happened that there were no seats. All the seats were taken all around the tables and stuff, and except for the one that had just been vacated by Chris. So Davari and I looked up at the same time, and we're wired exactly the same way. We used to be roommates, and we're and piss takers. So we immediately look at each other, and without saying a word, just go, go over here, there's a seat right here, buddy. Come and sit down. I see Abyss and JB and all these other girls. They all see what we're doing and just go oh, I've got to go to complete. So we made sure that I said, let's all pour drinks. And I said, the second that that Chris walks back through the door, everybody act like he just told the funniest joke in the world. High five. So, as soon as he walks through the door, everyone's like, bursting out laughing. This guy's the best. Oh, we love this guy. He kept bowling over. That was it. That was the last straw.
Yeah.
He kept bowling over 100 miles an hour. Get out of my seat. If there was someone had to held him back, you would have killed him. And then after that, he sat down and we calmed it down, and then we basically told him. Just not changing any plans. Just been messing with each other.
Has he ever forgiven you for that?
He tells that story to this day. The first thing, because we don't see each other that much, the first thing he did, if someone hasn't heard the story,
he'll share it.
He'll be this guy told the worst thing of me ever.
So what's the year ahead for you then? What have you got to look forward to? Obviously coming to the UK to wrestle?
Yes. In the immediate future, Nikki and I will be appearing for PCW in Blackpool, for Kamikaze in Birmingham, and for ICW, which I'm excited about.
Very exciting.
The 29th of August, we're at Blackpool for PCW, and then in Birmingham that night for Kamikaze. So it'll be a rough double shot.
Yeah.
And then on the 30th, August 30th, we're going to be in Glasgow for ICW.
Yes, SECC, isn't it, I think?
I think that's the one, then, I'm very heavily involved in the promotion for the first ever UK Global Force.
Yeah, very excited by that.
Which will be at the end of October. Wednesday, October 28th, we're going to be at the Grimmsborium.
Yep.
And then on Friday, October 30th, we're going to be in my hometown.
Yeah, going home.
Where we've been built from in King's Lynn at Lynchport, which is a great venue. Been really good with us. Both venues have been excellent, really great partners for us on this show. You can go to, obviously you can go to globalforcewrestling.com for the information, or for Grimsby, you can go to grimsbyauditorium.org.uk, or you can go, or for Lynchport, you can go to Alive Leisure www.royalramblings.co.uk.
We'll put all the links up on the article, so they'll be able to get them there. And the Superstar Body is out now. You can get that from all good retailers.
Yeah, it's available now. The best way to get a physical copy, if you want a physical copy of the book, is to get it from Pitch Publishing, which is Pitch, as in like football pitch, pitchpublishing.co.uk.
Yeah.
But it's available. It's available on all good ebook e-readers. You know, Amazon Kindle. It's available from Amazon in the UK and various other outlets. And the website, which has all of those links and all this information, is going to be, and we're going to be uploading some really great bonus content coming up soon from some of our guest contributors and various other stuff. So it's superstarbodybook.com.
And again, we'll put all those links up in the article. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an honour and a pleasure to have you on the show. And we look forward to hopefully speaking with you again soon when you're over in the UK.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks a lot.